Welcome to Tilly's Trans Tuesdays. We've got lots more data to discuss this week as we wrap up talking about the 2022 U.S. Trans Survey results, part two. I'm Tilly Bridges, your host, and I'm joined by my writing partner, my best friend, my wife, our token cis representation, the only human I'd say I have 100% satisfaction with, Susan Bridges.
100%, huh?
Well, yes.
I don't know. I'm going to have to challenge that a little bit.
Our returning guest is Charlie Hutchinson, a polyamorous, trans femme, non-binary social worker intern. After teaching middle and high school mathematics for over two decades, Charlie socially and medically transitioned in 2021 and has been working on completing their Master of Social Work. Charlie currently interns at the Gender Health Center in Sacramento, California, under the supervision of Dr. David Nyland, where she works with LGBTQ+ and BIPOC clients and participates in community advocacy. Her areas of focus are gender nonconformity, neurodivergence, and non-monogamy. Welcome back, Charlie.
It's good to be back.
Okay, so in that bio, and you talked a little bit about in the last episode, you were a math teacher before your big career change. And did you come out while you were still teaching? How did that go?
I did.
Yeah, how was that?
So I taught math for 23 years.
That's a long time.
18 years at a middle school and after that at a high school. And in the summer between leaving school in May of 2021, coming back in August of 2021, I began my transition. I started the HRT. I started the process to change my name. And so when I came back in the fall, I was using my new name, using my new pronouns, and wearing gender-affirming clothing. And these were students that I had seen from the middle school through the high school. So many of these students had been in my class for 5 or 6 years at that point in time.
How did they respond? How did it go?
The kids overwhelmingly responded very positive.
Excellent.
I swear a few of them just shrugged and said, yeah, that makes sense.
Sure.
But I got the most positive affirmation from students that were in my class.
That's really great. I love the sort of nonchalant responses. That's what we got from our kid when I came out to him. I just, you know, I was like, oh, I know you learned about trans people in school and I'm trans and I'm going to start transitioning. And he was like, okay, that was it. He didn't care at all. And I was like, that's kind of beautiful because that's how it should be, right? So, oh, okay. It's like, I have red hair. All right. Good for you. I'm left-handed. Okay. You know, it shouldn't matter that much. And so I think there's something really beautiful in that.
I love the representation I was able to provide.
Yeah.
Although I wasn't able to talk about myself or that aspect of myself to the students, I was still there going through that process in front of them. I had one student come up to me later and tell me that it was so wonderful just to see that transgender people could experience joy. That they had never been able to experience that aspect.
Yeah, I think that it's really important. I've talked many times about how important it is for us to be visible and out if it is safe for us to be so, because it helps so many other people. You know, like just being their teacher as an out trans person, you're giving them such a good example of how it's okay. You can transition and you can still have your job. You can still do what you want to do. You can still exist and be happy. And that kind of representation, you know, like you mentioned, we didn't have that. We didn't have anything. And just seeing that, knowing that it's possible, helps so many people. So I'm so glad that it went so well for you and that you were there for them. That's really cool. Okay, so for you, what has been the most surprising thing about your transition?
I consider my transition a singularity point in my life. There
Okay.
is no way I could have predicted where my life was going to go after that point in time.
Sure.
At the time, I was committed to being a teacher, but the problems that I found in my class and general society, compounded.
Yeah.
And once I was free of my own dysphoria, I found myself realizing that most of my life had been on autopilot.
Yeah.
I have recollection of the 20 years from college to my transition, yet if I look back on it, it's like, how was that 20 years? That could all have been compressed into like 4 or 5 years. But I was just autopilot and just doing things automatically without really thinking or asking myself what it was I wanted to do. I
Yeah.
ultimately ended up getting divorced, and following that, I pursued my own interest in polyamory. I'm now in multiple committed relationships with people across the country. I have been traveling to different cities and different states. I never would have done any of those things. So, what is the most surprising? I think the most surprising is that when I originally transitioned, I told people, it's still me, I'm still the same person. But that wasn't true. I didn't know who I was yet. That
Sure.
was the most surprising thing for me.
Yeah, it's amazing how much changes, not just outside of the way you're perceived by people and all of those things that you sort of expect are going to happen. But I had this thing happen where, in like social events, I would always be so uncomfortable because I didn't want to be seen, I didn't want to be perceived and have to put on that mask and try to pretend to be a guy that I didn't know how to be. And once that was gone and I got to just be myself, I found going to like events with people I didn't know kind of exciting because I get to meet new people and learn new things about them. And I never in a million years would have thought that that could have possibly happened. I thought, this is just how I am. I don't like meeting new people. And that was not true at all. So you just never know.
Same
Yeah.
thing, exact same thing. I was like, oh, hey, I'm actually extroverted. Who knew?
Yeah. It's a little bit of a surprise. I know that took you by surprise too.
You were definitely very different.
Oh, yeah. I was
It
the.
changed, it also changed like the whole dynamic of our relationship too.
Well, sure.
But that's a totally different topic.
I guess it probably is. Okay, so if you had one piece of advice for people who were just starting their transition, what would it be?
Usually, the question is one piece of advice for myself in the past, and
Well, it could be. I
would have
mean,
been tell
yeah.
somebody. I kept secrets that I never should have. So, one piece of advice for people that are just starting your transition, you're gonna learn new things and you're gonna make mistakes, and that's
Yeah.
okay, and that doesn't mean you're a failure.
Absolutely. It's a journey and it's a process, and you're learning as you go. You don't know, right? I mean, just to use myself as an example, as a trans woman, like cis women have their entire lives to figure out how to be the kind of woman they want to be. And we're trying to, I was trying to speed run it in a year, you know? And it's like, I'm not gonna figure it out that fast. It takes time to figure out who you are and who you want to be.
I abused the Amazon return policy so badly.
Yeah. You do what you gotta
I
do.
mean, they deserve it. It's fine.
Okay. Oh, and I forgot to ask this last episode, so I want to be sure that I get it out there now. Where can people find you online if they would like more of Charlie after listening?
So I do have a media presence on Instagram and Facebook. On Facebook, it's just my name, Charlie Hutchinson. Instagram, it's at C_T_Hutchinson. Everything's set to private to keep boundaries
Sure.
between myself, my students, and the clients I work with. But feel free to send me a DM if you'd like to add, and I'll bring you in.
Excellent. They should, folks listening, because I love your posts. They're so joyful and I love seeing your smile. It brings me happiness. So.
I gotta look you up on Instagram. All right.
And I used to run my Instagram as a nature blog back before I
Oh,
transitioned.
wow.
So
Wow.
if you go scroll back through my Instagram, there's like hundreds of pictures where I don't appear in them at all. You can clearly see where my transition happened because it goes from pictures of
Okay.
birds and plants to pictures of me.
Oh, yeah, I was kind of okay. Folks listening can't see the look that Susan was giving me. Yes, okay.
But now you're like recognized everywhere,
Yes.
which is actually convenient for me because I don't like to go up to people.
So now they come to us because they recognize
Because up
me
to
because I
what's
post so many
next? They're like,
selfies.
oh, it's Tilly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I remember one of
Oh,
your
yeah.
posts was every trans selfie is an act of defiance.
Yes, it
And
is.
I loved that.
Thank you. I every once in a while I post one where I say that again because I want to remind people that it is, you know, it's about seeing ourselves for the first time in our lives and celebrating that and showing that joy for the other trans people out there who need it. But it is an act of defiance, of resistance in a society that wants trans people hidden and gone and in the shadows, and to say, no, I'm here and I'm happy to be me and you're not going to stop me. So, yeah. It's a big middle finger to transphobes every time we post one. And I love that.
That
So,
that's a good thing.
yeah.
They deserve all the middle finger. So,
They do.
I mean,
I've only got two, but every selfie is an extra. So
yeah.
now there's like thousands.
That's right.
Okay.
Perfect.
All right. If you missed last week, definitely start there to learn about why this survey is so vital and the importance of it being conducted by trans people. That was episode 69. Nice.
Nerd.
Okay. Back into the results. Only 36% of adult respondents said that all of their immediate family knew that they were trans and were supportive. 31% said they were very supportive, and 28% were neither supportive or unsupportive. While that last category isn't great, it's not awful. And it backs up what I've been saying for years. The transphobes are just a very loud, tiny minority. However, things get a lot more grim when you look at minors, where coming out means they're still legally under parental control. Among 16 to 17-year-olds who took the survey, only 44% had supportive immediate families, and 29% had unsupportive or very unsupportive environments. The propaganda war on transition care for kids is obviously taking its toll. Those kids deserve so much better. And if you don't understand how safe, tested, and needed that care is for kids, there's no surgeries, damn it. See the Trans Tuesday on trans kids and the intake exam at tillystranstuesdays.com.
I do a lot of work with trans youth,
Yeah.
and that is the number one thing we talk about in sessions is unsupportive family, unsupportive environment. A lot of these kids are out with their family, and then they go to school, and their school policies, force teachers to dead name kids in
Yeah.
the district that I live in. There's parents that I know that are moving their kids to different school districts just to avoid the policies that are being enacted around where I live here. The
Yeah.
state is currently suing some of the school districts right here. And I have clients who are not out to their parents. They've gone through the process of acquiring HRT, they're self-dosing. They're not out to their parents. So I've heard one use the phrase boiling the frog. Like the changes are so subtle on a day-to-day basis that the people that they're living with don't notice that they're
Yeah.
actively undergoing a medical transition. And there is so much fear about, oh, these are irreversible, permanent changes. What if they regret it? I regret going through a male puberty. Those were
Exactly. Me
irreversible
too.
medical changes that I can't undo.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah, that's the thing I think that they so many people don't get as about that, you know, irreversible changes is that that's going to happen to our bodies one way or the other, from one puberty or the other. And so for kids, all they're giving them are the puberty blockers that pause it, and so then no changes will happen, and then they can stay on those and add other hormones if they feel ready, or they can stop them and puberty proceeds as their body normally would on its own. They're used in cis kids for decades and decades, totally safe, who have precocious puberty to just stall it for a little bit.
that's really how you know that the transphobes out there really do not care, because
Right.
there is actually an answer to every one of their questions. They
Yes.
just continue to wallow in their own stupidity.
Right. And
And
for
they'll
the
keep using the argument. We need to let, they're delaying the age of,
Oh
we should
yeah.
let them decide at 25. We should let them decide at 30. But We should let them decide. We should let them take blockers until they have the decision capabilities
Exactly.
to decide, because they're harmless. The changes are completely reversible. There is no long-term medical complication from taking blockers before the
Yeah.
onset of puberty. And that gives these children the opportunity to make a decision. But rather, these people passing these laws are trying to force the binary puberty
Yeah.
onto children who are not ready for it.
Yeah. And for cis folks listening, try to imagine, you know what the puberty of the opposite gender from you is like, and try to imagine your body going through that, the sheer body horror of watching it happen and not being able to stop it and hating every single thing it's doing to you. So it's so important that trans kids have access to those blockers. You're saving them from potentially a lifetime of pain and dysphoria and misery. It's so important. Okay. 11% of adults who took the survey who grew up in a home with family, guardians, or foster parents said that a family member was violent towards them because they were trans, and 8% were kicked out because they were trans. 5% of 16 and 17-year-olds who took the survey and grew up in a home with family, guardians, or foster parents said that a family member was violent towards them because they were trans, and 8% were kicked out because they were trans. Those numbers are slightly better than for the adults, but many of the adults who took the survey could have been 16 or 17 just a year or two ago, and the difference in percentages isn't exactly huge. 34% of respondents were experiencing poverty, over a third. 18% were unemployed, 11% said they were fired, lost a job, or were forced to resign due to being trans. 30% had experienced homelessness at some point. When we tell you trans people lose our jobs, when some people feel forced into sex work because they have no other options, when we tell you trans people have no money, this is what we're talking about. Basically, a third of us have been through this. In the prior year, 4% had been denied access to a public bathroom, and 6% had been verbally harassed, physically attacked, or experienced unwanted sexual contact in public bathrooms. Compare that 6% with the amount of assaults cis legislators claim trans women make in bathrooms, 0%, and you can empirically see they're fighting a made-up problem to drum up bigoted support instead of protecting the people who are actually assaulted in there. There's an article about how entirely fictional the entire quote-unquote bathroom debate is in the show notes.
And it's always presented as trans women going into the bathroom
Yeah.
and creating this unsafe environment. Yet, if these laws are actually followed, what you're going to end up with is a bunch of trans men in the women's bathroom.
Right.
And
Trans men
these
look a
trans
lot like
men
cis
look like
men,
men.
and yep,
they sure do.
Yeah, that's a thing that we've talked about before. It was in the episode on the erasure of trans men, and part of that happening to them is in all of these laws where people completely ignore the existence of them as if they're not a thing, because by forcing trans women into the men's room, you are forcing trans men into the women's room. And I think a lot of cis women would be much more uncomfortable with that. So it's.
I've definitely seen someone online who has infiltrated some of these Facebook groups of transphobes and
Yeah.
had that exact situation happen and be like, they didn't know what to do.
Right. If you caused this, it's your
And it's
fault.
like you're so close to getting
So
it.
close.
You're so close.
9% said they were denied treatment or service in the past year due to being trans. 30% said they were verbally harassed in the last 12 months because of their gender identity or expression. 39% said that they were harassed online. 3% said that they were physically attacked in the last 12 months because of their gender identity or expression. Keep in mind those stats are for the year prior to filling out the survey and things change. When I filled out the survey, I reported that I'd not been verbally harassed in the year prior, but I was in the year following when I ran into a horrible bigot on my way to one of the WGA strike pickets. It was horrible. At 9:28 a.m. on July 31st, 2023, I posted, "Going to the WGA picket at Universal and just experienced a horrid, really loud, vocal bout of transphobia from someone passing by, not part of the picket. Super start to the day, love to be hated for existing." I talked about the otherwise largely positive experience of being out on those strike lines in the summer of 2023 in the Trans Tuesday on Proactive Allyship, which was episode 35 of this podcast. What's your experience with that been, Charlie? Have you been able to escape bigoted harassment from strangers in public.
One of the more interesting experiences I had was literally having somebody hanging out the side of their best friend's ride trying to holler at me.
Oh no.
It's like, oh my gosh, I'm living in a song. I've had people, it's almost never face to face. It's almost always people driving by will shout things at me, or I will get an intense amount of harassment online.
Yeah.
Prior to closing my social media account, I would receive regularly daily reports that people had been flagging me for, I think it's on Reddit, you get somebody has reported you for, that they're concerned for your well-being. And so I would frequently get those. People would follow me with clearly transphobic names that, for accounts that they had created. So I'd have people following me called "You are not a woman" or things
I've had
like
those.
that. I would regularly receive messages from people telling me that I'm mentally ill, sick, that I should never be allowed around children, that I should go kill myself, these sorts of things. So I've been constantly subjugated to that. I've also been fetishized online. I would regularly receive sexually explicit content
All
just
the
because
time.
I am a trans woman.
For folks listening, there is a Trans Tuesday on the fetishization of trans women that you can find at tillystranstuesdays.com. But I will warn you before you go look that up that I include a lot of examples. And so some of it is very difficult to read because we get treated really terribly by so many people. 70% of respondents in the survey said they'd feel varying degrees of uncomfortable asking police for help. You can count me among them. And 62% said that was because of being trans. Again, count me among them. Trans Equality has a paper on, in their words, the quote, epidemic of anti-trans violence trans people experience at the hands of police. You should maybe give it a read if those numbers were surprising to you. Find it in the show notes. 48% said none of their identification, driver's license, birth certificate, passport, had the name they wanted on it. And 20% said they only had the name they wanted on at least one ID. Only a third had the name they wanted on all identification. 59% said none of their ID had the gender they wanted. 23% said only some ID had the gender they wanted, which means some of their ID has the right gender, some has the wrong one, and just imagine what that's like. Almost half of us have zero identification with our true names on it, and even more have the wrong gender. Cis folks, try to imagine for a second what it'd be like to go through life with no identification that actually matched who you are. Because if you think that's not a problem, 22% of all respondents reported being verbally harassed, assaulted, asked to leave, or were denied services when they showed an ID with a name or gender that didn't match what people expected to see. Having the wrong ID when you have to show it forcefully outs us to whoever is looking at it. And that opens you up to all kinds of problems.
This is something I work with a lot of people at my agency. I help them complete name and gender change petitions. In California, at least gender is an attestation. If you go to apply for an identification, you get to choose what gender goes on that card. There is no legal requirement or process that you go through. A lot of the times, we'll advise people that are coming in to only complete the name change process. Because if you do the name and gender change, that goes on to a court record that can be looked up in the future. And so if you're only doing a name change, if they go and look that up, they'll see that they went through the process to get a name change, but it doesn't explain any more than that. So that's also a concern, is that, the Attorney General and Lieutenant Governor of Texas have been trying to subpoena records. There's the same has been happening in Florida, where they've been trying to subpoena DMV records to try and look up name changes. And so if you get that associated at the same time with the gender change, that outs you, even if you've gone through all of the proper channels. So kind of looking to hopefully future-proof that. However, that's only in California. Other states have much more rigorous requirements. Some states you have to have completed a gender-affirming surgery in order to get your marker changed. And that's not something that everybody has access to or even wants to do. only 20% of people that want to pursue gender-affirming surgery have access to the financial means to do so.
Yeah, it's not an easy thing for people to do. And it's goes back, I think, to the, trans medicalism issue of not every trans person wants those surgeries, and that doesn't mean that they're not the gender they say they are. And you should not be forced to get it in order to get that gender marker changed. So much of this country is so horribly hostile in that way.
And being outed like can happen in so many ways like you don't even expect.
Yeah.
Like just thinking like about like my own, like every time the insurance changes, I have to prove I'm married to you. Well,
Right.
the marriage documentation is from Southern Indiana. I doubt very much I can change that.
Yeah, they're not going, they're very hostile to trans people.
So I have to prove we're married and then provide the court order that shows you are the same
And
person
then I'm
that I
outed
married.
to them.
And then you're outed. And that's going to happen
Every
every
time.
time, unless I'm able to do something about it, which I may not be able to do. Even though you have your marker changes, you have your
Everything's
ID,
been changed
everything's been
for
changed.
me.
Except
So,
that.
except that. 80% of adults and 60% of 16 and 17-year-olds who were out or were simply perceived as trans experienced mistreatment in school. That includes verbal harassment, physical attacks, online bullying, not being allowed to dress in the clothes they want, teachers or staff refusing to use chosen names or pronouns, or being denied the use of restrooms or locker rooms matching their gender identity. Again, the propaganda war being waged on trans kids is having real consequences, and we need representatives who are going to fight it.
And this also affects cis people
It sure does.
because they're being harassed when people think they might be trans, even like a woman with a short haircut. Like it's gender policing,
It
the
is.
dumbest thing in the world.
I mean, there are cis women who have strong jawlines or broad shoulders or who don't want to shave their legs, and people are gonna, it's all about, upholding the
And
cis
people have
heteronormativity.
hormonal conditions like PCOS, where women do grow some facial hair. And it's like, come on, guys. Just let people be.
That's very hard for them
Try to better yourself in some way.
to.
Stop being concerned about everyone around you. That's my message. Learn a language. Take a painting. I don't know. Just anything else.
Anything else? Leave us alone. 47% thought about moving to another state because their state government considered or passed laws that targeted transgender people for unequal treatment, such as banning access to bathrooms, healthcare, or sports. 5% had actually moved. The top 10 states trans people left due to discriminatory laws were Alabama, Arizona, Florida, Georgia, Missouri, North Carolina, Ohio, Tennessee, Texas, and Virginia. Sadly, I think there's no surprises there. That is the end of the early insights from the 2022 U.S. Trans Survey. I hope it's given you a window with proof into the kinds of things trans people are dealing with and begging cis folks to help fix. Did you have any thoughts on the survey results overall, Charlie? Were they what you expected, or is there anything that really surprised you?
I found the results aligned really closely with what published research has been saying, that gender-affirming care saves lives. Access to gender-affirming care saves lives. That the regret rate is so incredibly low compared to any other medical procedure that if this wasn't challenging to the heteronormativity of society, that it would be upheld as like one of the greatest medical treatments ever discovered. The idea that people need to prove who they are is challenged by this survey. The people fundamentally understand their own identity and shouldn't have to validate it to everybody else in order to get access to gender-affirming care and services. That there are more people out there than anybody really suspects. 48% of people in the United States claim they do not know a transgender person personally. Statistically, that's impossible. And so what it means is that most transgender people are living a life where they're not able or secure enough to let other people they care about know who they are. And that is scary and frightening.
Yeah, it means that they don't feel you're safe enough to come out to, or the conditions, if you look at, again, the numbers from the harassment that people have experienced and the denial of services that they need, just from this survey, how dangerous it is to be out in some parts of this country. It's really, really a scary thing for them, and it shouldn't need to be.
The percentage of trans people in the United States is roughly the same as the percentage of people who have red hair. So if you know somebody who has red hair, you know somebody that's trans. You just might not know it.
Yeah. They might not know yet, or they may, and they just haven't told you. So everybody's got some trans people in their life somewhere. So if they haven't, you know, told you that they're trans yet, think about maybe why that is and what you can do to make that better for them.
As part of my advocacy, whenever anybody asks what they can do to be a better ally, I borrow the language from Black Lives Movement, that to be an ally is to be a verb. You need to perform actions. It's not something that you can stand by and watch.
Right. It's a thing you do, not a thing you are. Thank you for being here, Charlie.
Absolutely. I'm glad to be here.
These results are pretty sobering, but give us the kind of data we need to push for policy changes and fight for equal rights for trans people. Trans rights are human rights, but we cannot get them if cis people don't make it happen. Cis people who live in those top 10 worst states, or who are appalled by what you heard in this report, what are you doing to make it better for trans people? There aren't enough trans people to stop these laws on our own. We cannot affect political change on our own. There aren't enough of us. We are too small a part of the population. We need you, or nothing will ever change. Tilly Bridges, End Transmission. Tilly's Trans Tuesdays is hosted by Tilly Bridges and Susan Bridges, with audio editing and sound mixing by Jillian Morgan. The Google Doc and social media versions of this week's topic and all past topics are available at tillystranstuesdays.com. Special thanks to Daisy and Jane for the use of Sorry Not Sorry as our show's theme music. Please stop by and show your support at daisyandjane.bandcamp.com and soundcloud.com/daisyandjane. You can find me at Tilly Bridges on Blue Sky, Twitter, and Hive, on Mastodon at tillybridges@mastodon.social, at facebook.com/TillySBridges, and on Insta and Threads at HeckYeahTillyBridges. And you can find Susan on most of those at Susan L. Bridges. You can find Jillian at AudioJillian on Blue Sky. You can join the Tillyverse Discord server by following the link at the very bottom of TillysTransTuesdays.com. We hold regular watch parties for the Matrix films and other trans movies, where I do a live Q&A, and it's blossomed into a wonderfully supportive, compassionate, kind community of friends. We'd love to have you join us. For more information, visit pendantaudio.com. Thanks for listening.